In Luke's version of the Sermon on the Mount given by Jesus, he was preaching to folks in an occupied nation that held numerous powerful enemies. But instead of focusing on their enemies, he invited them to look around, to consider the wildflowers and the birds of the air, to think of the sun shining on both the good and the evil. He was offering them a path to freedom by making them aware of their place within God's creation.
That's the Reverend Dr. Becca Stevens. And today she shares an inspiring message called Loving Our Enemy is Our Saving Grace. I'm Peter Wallace, and this is Day One.
Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's historic Protestant churches, sharing insight and inspiration from God's Word for your life. Now to introduce this week's preacher, here's our host, Peter Wallace.
Thank you, Sherry. Today on Day One, we're pleased to welcome the Reverend Dr. Becca Stevens, an Episcopal priest, social entrepreneur, and author. Becca is founder and president of Thistle Farms, a community of women who have survived trafficking, prostitution, and addiction. She also serves as the Episcopal chaplain at St. Augustine's Chapel on the Vanderbilt University campus in Nashville, Tennessee, where she lives with her husband, songwriter Marcus Hummond, and their three sons. Becca has earned degrees from Vanderbilt and Suwannee, the University of the South, and is the author of several books, including Snake Oil, The Art of Healing and Truth-Telling, Letters from the Farm, and her latest book, Love Heals. Becca, welcome to Day One.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
You were recognized as one of the 10 CNN heroes a couple of years ago, and you truly have been a hero to many because of your multifaceted ministry. But first, let's talk about the Thistle Farms ministry and how and why that got started.
Well, you know, it got started because I really wanted to have a sanctuary for women who were coming off the streets and out of prison. I'd seen how people were being treated and warehoused and how it looked still violent. And I thought, wouldn't it be beautiful just to open a lavish house and build it like you might build a cathedral or a church and invite the women to come in and give them the time and the space they need to really do their own healing work? And that's how it got started. But it was several years into it when it was like, if we're really talking about loving women and they're so poor, we have to start our own business. And that's when we started making bath and body care products and turning it into an international company.
And that plan has blossomed in a variety of other places.
Oh, my gosh. It's such a testimony to the power of a communal vision. You know, like when people come together and their hearts are in the right place, something amazing happens that none of us could have gotten to on our own. So we have, you know, a cafe that saw 50,000 customers last year. That's amazing. We sell annually more than $3 million a year in bath and body care products. Now we have 50 sister communities around the country and 26 global partners. And it's just this amazing team of people that want to love each other.
And you're doing a lot of traveling, partly in preparation for a conference in June. What's going to happen there?
So we're organizing ourselves because we're hosting a national conference June 9th through 11th in Nashville, Tennessee, called Been There, Healing That. And the idea is to have a conference about shared wisdom, a conference about really networking and being there for each other and remembering that justice is a non-competitive sport, that we have to really work together and help each other because the work is plenty hard. Everybody has waiting lists. And if we can just come together for not just best practices, but really just supporting each other as we each do the best we can, then we would be a lot farther. And the other thing is that everybody's trying to do these social justice enterprises now, and everybody's markets are pretty small. And so the more that we can cooperate, the more that we can collaborate on products, not just on programs, we can expand markets, and it's helping everyone.
So this sort of ministry can be replicated in various communities. How do people go about starting something similar if they're interested?
Well, it's easy. Just go to the website, thistlefarms.org, and you'll see it. And you'll see some of the beautiful sister communities that are already there. And there might be something closer to you than you might think. You know, right here in Atlanta, there's a beautiful community called Beloved that's doing wonderful work. But that's how it is all over the country, that, you know, we try to really say, here's the core principles, here mm-hmm. how you can replicate, and here's how we can be an mm-hmm. affiliated network that shares common goals and values, but we really love our independence and love the idea that there is shared authority.
Becca, how do you avoid becoming overwhelmed by the crises of trafficking and opioids and violence and abuse these days?
The global issues of human trafficking are horrific and mm-hmm. devastating, and it can be overwhelming to people. Mm-hmm. Or they might think, what difference does it make if I get involved? Or they might get cynical or fearful. But what I've learned is that the story of women coming together in community and healing is a story of hope. And it doesn't feel overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And when people can be a part of that community, it's healing for everybody. I have come to believe truly that when you rape women, especially young women, you can kill villages.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start working village by village and healing women, they heal whole communities of people, mm-hmm. not just their families and their neighbors, but their schools and their churches. And it's a powerful voice about how helping a very small group of people can make a huge difference.
So your latest book is called Love Heals, and it offers hope for those who need healing from brokenness, anxiety, life barriers. How do you guide readers through those wounds of life?
So when I start thinking about Love Heals, and Love Heals is the mantra of Thistle Farms, mm-hmm. I start thinking about all the different angles of love, how we see love from different places and how love moves in our lives. And so I started just writing chapters on each one of those. So love heals through daily rituals. Love heals with compassion. Love heals during the act of forgiving. Love heals beside still waters. Love heals upon the mountaintop. Stuff like that. And just start really focusing on all the different ways we can find healing. And I try to keep it pretty simple and pretty practical for folks, but also give it enough poetry that it lifts your heart up.
And you've written a number of other books, including one with your husband, Marcus Humman, called The Passion, which has an accompanying CD or download of music. Talk about how that came about.
Well, actually, the piece started out as a cantata. I have been a pastor at a church for 25 years, and I was so tired of hearing The Passion play read. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And like a whole group goes, crucify him, crucify him. Crucify him. There's no passion. And that's what I kept saying, that if we were singing it and mm-hmm. turning those readings on Palm Sunday into something that people could really engage in. Well, he got a grant and he turned it into this beautiful cantata. And then it was the National Episcopal Church publishing house mm-hmm. that wanted us to write a book to go along with it. So actually the book goes along with the music.
Cool.
So they're just reflections on the passion pieces that he wrote.
And what's Marcus working on now?
Oh my gosh, he's working on Frederick Douglass.
Wow.
He's got, it's a beautiful musical, and he's got amazing interest out of New York. They're in the workshop phase of it, and then they'll do a reading up in New York, and they're planning on it going the whole way.
And your son Levi has a new record out.
He does. This is really fun. So Levi is our oldest of three boys, and you know, when he was little, he didn't know what he wanted to do when he was big, and his dad and I kept giving him different suggestions. And I remember once I said, you know, maybe you'll be a songwriter. And he was like, no. And then he said, my husband said to him, well, maybe you'll be a priest. And he goes, ooh, no, that's a girl job. And he ended up being a songwriter just like his daddy. And it's gone really, really well. He has toured the world. He's been on touring for the last couple years, and he just released his first EP. So it's five songs, and people can just download it on iTunes, but it's beautiful.
So you're the founder not only of Thistle Farms, but of several other enterprises and organizations. So what drives your passion as a social entrepreneur, as you put it?
You know, sometimes I think I was really born for that intersection where arts and crafts and justice come together. And it's like, it's a very narrow place, but I get excited. I get excited about thinking of creative ways that we can engage huge issues of injustice so it's digestible for us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a participatory sport again for us, you know, just that we can play.
Mm-hmm.
So like when I hear about the refugee crisis, I think, what can we do to be creative and engage with women who are in the camps, and how do we do it? And that's been a passion for the last couple of years, and it's been beautiful. And you start seeing the connections between refugees and human trafficking. You know, more than 12,000 girls are missing. So then I get fired up around the injustices of it, and then start to think, like, there's got to be ways to engage a lot of people in this issue in a way that really shares stories. I've come to believe that through this work, what I love about it so much, truly, is that, you know, if I want people to get really stuck in their positions, I will debate them and I will preach to them. But if I want to open people up and think about ways that we can both move forward together in a loving way, we got to share stories. We got to share tasks and jobs together. And in, you know, what I've come to learn is that that's why women have been sewing in a circle for so long. That's why women have gone down to the river to wash their clothes. It's like we do these things together and we bond and we change and it's powerful. And that's how I want to do it. And so I get fired up and I get new ideas all the time.
Great.
No, that's bad for everybody, really. It's really bad.
And you also continue to serve as chaplain of St. Augustine's Chapel on the Vanderbilt campus. How does your interaction with that community inform the rest of your life and work?
Oh, that's my home altar, you know. That's where I go. That's where I go to be home. I'm not there that much anymore. I mean, Scott Owens is an Episcopal priest that has carried that congregation and done a beautiful job with it. But when I'm home, that's where I go to either preach or worship or both sometimes. But there's nothing like, you know, the light that comes through the window at that hour on Sunday morning. You know, the way the singing's going to sound and the way the liturgy's going to move. And you can breathe and relax into it. So I love it.
Now, you mentioned Thistle Farms. The products that are produced, what are your favorites?
Oh, the healing oils, for sure, for sure. My favorite products are our healing oil blends and our straight essential oils. But it's one of our first products, but it's also, I think, truest to who I am, is the idea of taking these gifts of creation and blending them into something amazing that is for our healing. And I love that there's something like 425 scriptures about oils. I mean, oils are a big deal in people's spiritual lives. And so it's fun to play and then also to say, I wonder what that'll bear on the open market. You know, and that's our group in Rwanda. They make healing oils. The women who are survivors of the genocide, they've been our partners for more than like 12 years now. And so I get fired up about selling it because I also have seen it build houses. I've seen oil buy cows. I've seen oil reestablish families and build communities, not just heal bodies.
Wonderful. Well, Becca, your sermon is based on a section from Luke chapter 6. Would you read it for us?
Luke 6, 27 through 38. But I say to you that listen, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from anyone who takes away your coat, do not withhold even your shirt. Give to everyone who begs from you, and if anyone takes away your goods, do not ask for them again. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. If you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. If you lend to those from whom you hope to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love your enemies, do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. Your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, for He is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For the measure you give will be the measure you get back.
Becca, we look forward to hearing what you have to say about this in your sermon, Loving Our Enemy is Our Saving Grace. Thanks for sharing it with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm grateful.
Thank you.
Walking through the woods in winter, it's easy to spot mistletoe. It sits in splendor on lofty branches high in elm's canopy. After all the leaves have fallen and the woods have turned to gray, the mistletoe offers white berries and shiny green leaves like a siren song to those wandering beneath her. It is no wonder that all kinds of myths and legends have been written about mistletoe. Mysterious and vulnerable, she hovers above in glory, offering plenty of room for those of us below her to judge her, both for her beauty and her poison. People have shot mistletoe down with BB guns and climbed dangerously high just to capture her twigs. Bound in ribbon and tied under a doorway, she emboldens those who stand beneath her to await a kiss. One legend declares that the dangerous fruit of mistletoe was used to poison the arrow of an enemy of the goddess of love in order to kill her son. Weeping tears on the deadly arrow, the goddess cast a spell over mistletoe, promising all who passed beneath her to be given a kiss. Mistletoe is a good symbol for the absorption that we give an enemy. We build enemies into mythical proportions, then lose sight of the path. Maybe we think if we could control our enemies similar to the way we treat mistletoe, cut them down, bind them, or use them for our own purpose, maybe, just maybe, we will gain control of our lives and have the power we think we deserve. Enemies draw us in, and we create myths about them to warn our contempt. By giving so much power to an enemy, we create legends, give them space in our minds, and allow them to even step into our sacred dream world. When our enemies become our focus, they can obscure our path so we can't see the tree for the proverbial mistletoe and surely lose sight of the forest. Walking through the woods, we can always find mistletoe atop oaks, pines, and elms. By viewing and loving mistletoe as part of creation, we can honor it for what it is. We can turn our eyes back to the path in front of us and not be blind to all the amazing gifts of the woods. Mistletoe reminds us that by loving each and every part of creation, both the good and the bad, we are able to keep walking down a sacred path. Loving our enemies is our saving grace. In Luke's version of the Sermon on the Mount given by Jesus on the plain, there were wild fields and flowers. He was preaching to folks in an occupied nation that held numerous powerful enemies. But instead of focusing on their enemies, he invited them to look around, to consider the wildflowers and the birds of the air. He told them to think of the sun shining on both the good and the evil. He was offering them a path to freedom by making them aware of their place within God's creation. He says to the gathered crowd, "But love your enemies. Do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. Your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High. For he is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For the measure you give will be the measure you get back." There is a way out, he reminds us, from the trap of giving power to our enemies and focusing on how we can free ourselves from poisonous thoughts. Instead, the invitation in this gospel is to try walking a path of non-judgmental love that is blossoming with mercy and fruitful with gratitude. This is the path where forgiveness and freedom are found. The message of this gospel is that if we can love our enemies, it will be our own saving grace. By walking the path he is setting before us, we are going to understand how God loves and forgives us. If we can be radical enough in this world to try forgiveness and mercy, then we might find forgiveness and freedom for ourselves. In my work at Thistle Farms, a community of women survivors of trafficking, addiction, and violence, I have seen the miraculous truth of this gospel. I have learned that forgiveness does not mean you don't hold someone accountable and does not mean you will escape the trauma. It means there is a path forward that is deep and beautiful. Some of the steps on that path are forgiveness and mercy and not letting the enemy blind you to the beauty of the world. There's a woman named Sheila who was first trafficked at the age of 5. She came into Thistle Farms community in 2007, wounded and suffering with cancer. Sheila crossed a deep forest to find freedom and healing. She forgave her betrayer, made restitution with the courts, went back to school to gain a degree to help other survivors. She also got married and has 2 beautiful children. Sheila has gone on in her life to be a nationally recognized resource for hope and healing for women who are trafficked and has helped launch many survival programs across the country. Recently, she traveled with me to Mexico to help a group of women from the streets with a tea company, the Moringa Madres, who grow a wonderfully healing herb that is growing in popularity all over the world. Sheila's goal was to talk to the women about trauma-informed work communities and how they could support one another. When she arrived in the town in Mexico, she went to the home where one of the heads of the Moringa Madres was staying with her children. It was behind a dump, under a tarped roof, with a hose serving as the only source of water. When Sheila saw the way the family was surviving, she began to weep. She said that as bad as it had been for her, jailed, raped, and thrown into a river, she didn't think it had ever been this bad. Her compassion and loving tears were powerful preachers. Both women had reason to hold many enemies and resentments, and both women had chosen a different path. A path of freedom and hope that looked stronger to me than old enemies and deep fears. The mother explained that they could sell more of the moringa, but it would cost $387 to purchase a booth in the local market. Immediately, Sheila said, "I want to give you $387. She wasn't saying it out of obligation, but as an outpouring of love and gratitude for all the mercy she had experienced. A good measure shaken down and pressed together, running over, will be put into your lap. For the measure you give will be the measure you get back." They had each forgiven much, and they preached the gospel, finding a new path through those scary and old scarred woods. Sheila had walked in the woods beneath the mistletoe and not forgotten to see the beauty of the entire forest. She had embraced her enemies, had shown Herculean strength in walking many extra miles, and had become the preacher of the truth of this gospel. What mistletoes are you misjudging on your path that prevent you from finding a way through the woods? What do you still need to forgive so that whomever you might think of as your enemy no longer overcomes you? What is the $387 in your life that you could give or receive as a measure of this truth? These are the questions that carry me through this season. I want to be free to see the mistletoe in its beautiful winter light and love it as simply part of an amazing journey. May God give us all the grace to see clearly how loving our enemies can truly be our saving grace. Amen.
Our day one preacher today was the Reverend Becca Stevens, author, Episcopal priest, Vanderbilt chaplain, and founder and president of Thistle Farms in Nashville, Tennessee. For a free printed transcript of her message entitled, "Loving Our Enemy is Our Saving Grace," call us at 404-815-9110. That's 404-815-9110. Or write to us at Day 1, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. To listen again to today's program, share a sermon transcript, or watch inspiring videos, visit us online at day1.org. And remember, Day 1 depends on the generous contributions of our faithful listeners. If you appreciate our ministry, please consider sending a donation. We're grateful for your much-needed support. I'm Sherry Miller. Next week, our preacher is the Reverend Dr. Greg DeLoach, Interim Dean of Mercer University's McAfee School of Theology in Atlanta, Georgia. His message is entitled, Seeing the World in a Whole New Light. Be sure to tune in for the next Day One. Day One is shining the light of God's love for listeners like you, day by day, all around the world. Please make a donation so we can continue to inspire you and countless others. Mail your gift to Day One, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia, 30305. Or call us at 404-815-9110. Or give securely online at dayone.org. Thank you, and God bless you. Now, Becca Stevens offers some final reflections on today's message with our host, Peter Wallace.
Becca, thank you for your beautiful message. You spoke about mistletoe as a symbol for the absorption we give an enemy, building them into mythic proportions in our minds, wanting to cut them down, bind them, use them to gain control of our lives. But we lose sight of the path in doing so. I wonder if you might help us identify some of those enemies in our lives that we may be doing this with.
You know, I think of it as petty tyrants, people who are very, very distracting to us. Mm-hmm. They're great spiritual teachers, people that actually don't have power over you, but you almost give them power over you. Maybe it's somebody at work. Maybe it's somebody in your family or in your wider community or church life. It could be any of those folks, but like, the reason I use mistletoe is it's so obvious. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just sits there in the middle of winter. Everything else is just bare, and it's just like sitting in the very top. But mm-hmm. if you are distracted by it, you can trip over anything on the path. And I think that's what we do. Mm-hmm. It trips us up to be that distracted by people or things. And it's like, I think for all of us, the idea is that if I can feel peace, 1,000 people can feel peace. Mm-hmm. And if I feel no peace, no one around me is going to feel peace. And so the idea is like, let's just keep moving forward and doing our best to be free of that stuff. By the way, I don't live that way. I mean, you probably do, but it is a goal. For me, it is a big goal because it's, you know, we just don't have time to not love.
And as you said, mistletoe can also remind us that by loving each and every part of creation, both good and bad, we can keep walking that sacred path, that loving our enemies can be our saving grace, which is exactly what Jesus was teaching in Luke chapter 6. You said Jesus reminds us there's a way out from the trap of giving power to our enemies, instead walking a path of non-judgmental love that is blossoming with mercy and fruitful with gratitude. Oh, Becca, that seems so difficult in these days in our lives. But Sheila in her story was able to do it. Is there a secret for living this way ourselves?
You know, I don't know if this will make any sense at all, but when you're saying all that, it reminds me of a piece of advice I got a long time ago, which was go to therapy and clean the bathroom. You need to do both those mm-hmm. things. You need to really get humble about your own life. And be willing to go in your church. You know, I'll clean the restrooms. That's what I'll do. I'll preach and I'll clean the restrooms. Mm-hmm. You know, I will go seek therapy and healing, but I'll also do the hard grunt work mm-hmm. of this world. And so it is humbling and it's hard. It's not lofty. It's humbling, mm-hmm. for me at least.
Becca, what's one thing from your sermon today that you hope our listeners will keep in mind in the days to come?
Just to take the idea that you are giving yourself a gift by forgiving. That's it, really. If you can just take that away, you give yourself a big gift by forgiving. No one's asking you to forget. No one's asking you to not hold people accountable. It's just to forgive. It's the biggest gift, and I've seen it over and over. It's a gift.
Mm. Becca Stevens, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Day One is the voice of America's mainline Protestant churches. Visit us online at dayone.org. Our program is recorded and edited by Donald Jones and produced by Peter Wallace. Thank you for listening. I'm Sherry Miller, wishing you all God's blessings on day one and forever.